Park is improving access to drug treatment and social services for injection drug users through a pharmacy syringe access program in New York City. I just want to acknowledge Kate Stanis. She's co-author and she's in the audience. So, injection drug use has been driving the HIV epidemic in New York State since the mid-1980s. While the number of new cases of HIV that can be attributed to injection drug use is on a decline, it still remains a public health burden for IDUs and their sexual partners. While substance abuse treatment is recommended for all IDUs, many face barriers to effective treatment modalities. For example, a lot of times there's strict enrollment criteria and long waiting lists. And during these times of waiting, drug relapses are quite common. Recognizing that these barriers exist, several federal public health agencies recommend the once-only use of syringes for preparing and injecting drugs to stop the transmission of infectious diseases and HIV among injection drug users. Since there are approximately 200,000 injection drug users in New York City, and the average IDU injects about 1,000 times a day, in order to make this recommendation feasible, we really need to do something to increase access to sterile syringes. Now, syringe exchange programs, or SEPs, have been really successful at providing increased access to sterile syringes and also in providing a means for disposal. Several SEPs also provide additional services like health education, on-site medical services, counseling and screening for HIV and other infectious diseases, and referrals to substance abuse treatment and other medical services. And these additional services are really important, especially since many drug users don't have good access to health care, and many fear being mistreated in the medical in the health profession because of their drug use. Access to SCPs has also been associated with decreased incidence and prevalence of HIV and other bloodborne infections, improved access to HIV prevention programs, less needle sharing and other high-risk injection behaviors, and greater entry and retention into drug treatment programs. Despite their success, however, they're unable to meet the need of all IDUs. Laws and regulations, which make it increasingly difficult for IDUs to obtain and transport syringes, encourage sharing, and they further promote the transmission between injectors and their partners. Congress, for example, has prohibited federal funding for programs that provide IDUs with access to sterile syringes. So SCPs have to rely on financial support from local governments and private funders, and because of this limited funding, they have limited hours of operation, too few are located in urban centers, and as suggested by other research, fear of police harassment outside of syringe exchange sites is another major deterrent for using IDUs. So we still need to find other ways to supplement the source of clean syringes if we want people to be using new syringes. And pharmacies look like a good way to supplement this source. Pharmacies already have access to syringes. They have more convenient hours of operation. They're already established in most communities. And they also provide a greater potential anonymity for syringe customers. And because of these different factors, they may be attracting people that are not accessing syringes through SCPs, either because they're uncomfortable going to SCPs or because they require syringes outside of the hours that SCPs are able to provide them. In New York State, the Expanded Syringe Access Demonstration Program was enacted by state legislatures in August of 2000 and implemented in January 2001. And it deregulates non-prescription syringe sales in pharmacies and allows distribution via healthcare providers to reduce reusing and sharing of needles, and to reduce disease transmission among IDUs. Findings from the... So this law stipulates that pharmacies that are registered with ESOP can sell up to 10 syringes per transaction to people 18 years and older, and with each transaction, they're required to provide a safe use and disposal insert. Findings from our evaluation in 2003 revealed no harmful or unintended consequences, and during the period of this intervention, pharmacists' positive attitudes toward the program increased. The purpose of this analysis was to determine if a relationship already exists without an intervention between the frequency of pharmacy syringe purchase visits and access to drug treatment and or medical care among IDUs in New York City. So the data that we use comes from an ongoing cross-sectional analysis from the impact studies at the New York Academy of Medicine, which looks at several features of the urban environment and their impact on health. Participants were recruited through random street intercept sampling in 36 ethnographically defined neighborhoods in the Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, and Manhattan. And between the time period of January 20th, 2005 and October 24th, 2006, we enrolled 942 people, but we restricted the analysis to those that reported injection drug use. So our final sample size for this analysis is 288 people. The outcome of interest was the frequency of pharmacy syringe purchase visits. We categorized people as high-frequency pharmacy users, low-frequency pharmacy users, and those that did not purchase syringes at pharmacies at all. So high-frequency pharmacy users were those that purchased syringes more than once a week. Low-frequency pharmacy users were those that purchased syringes less than or equal to 2 to 3 times a month. And the exposures of interest, which I'm going to go into a little bit more detail in the next few slides, were injection practices, access to health services, and recent drug cessation attempts. We also looked at several socio-demographic variables. And in graph one, along the bottom, I have the characteristics that we looked at. Just to make a note, 3 asterisks denotes a significance at an alpha level of 0.001, 2 asterisks is a significance of 0.01, and 1 asterisk is a significance of 0.05. So in blue, we're comparing in blue people that did not use pharmacies to purple low-frequency pharmacy users, and yellow are high-frequency pharmacy users. And the one main thing that I want to draw your attention to is that both high-frequency pharmacy users and low-frequency pharmacy users were more likely to report that their primary source of syringes was SEPs. So 57% of frequent pharmacy users and 50.6% of infrequent pharmacy users had their primary source of syringes from SEPs. And because of our association in this study between the exposures of interest, so injection practices and access to health services between SEPs in prior literature and in our own studies, we didn't want to confound the effects of what we were actually seeing from pharmacies. So in the models from here on out, we controlled for SEP participation. In table one, we are comparing here low-frequency pharmacies versus none, and high-frequency pharmacies versus none for injection practices. Most of them are sharing injection equipment, shooting up in a shooting gallery, and using a new needle. And after we controlled for syringe exchange participation, when looking at high versus no pharmacies, we found that high-frequency pharmacy users had higher-risk injection practices in general, but they were more likely to use a new needle when they injected. We saw similar patterns when we compared low-frequency pharmacy use to none. The higher-risk injection practices, but still that they were using a new syringe more often. Then we looked at some drug cessation attempts, and we have the same setup at the top, low-frequency pharmacy use versus none, and high-frequency pharmacy use versus none, after controlling for SEP participation. And along the left, some of the things that we looked at were participation in drug treatment programs in the past 6 months, some cessation attempts, and then at the bottom, dependence on different drugs. And we found that, in general, when we looked at high-frequency pharmacy use versus none, that people were more likely to have been enrolled in a drug treatment program in the past 6 months, and they were also more likely to be dependent on drugs. And when we looked at low-frequency pharmacy use compared to none, we saw pretty much the same type of trend: more access to alcohol and drug treatment, and also higher dependence on drugs. In table three, we looked at access to health services by the same characteristics, low-frequency pharmacy use versus none, and high versus none after adjusting for SEP participation. So we wanted to see where people were going for medical care, when they were going for medical care, if they were seeing the same person on a repeated basis, if they had gone recently. We also looked at ER care and self-report of HIV serostatus. So comparing high-frequency pharmacy use to none, we found that high pharmacy use was associated with decreased access to medical care, and it was also associated with being HIV negative. But we had a small sample size for that. And then comparing low-frequency pharmacies to none. We didn't find any significant differences in this group. The final table looks at the final multiple logistic regression model. So we have two. At the top is for low-frequency pharmacies, and the bottom is high-frequency pharmacies. If you look at the bottom for high-frequency pharmacies, we see that after adjusting for the other variables of interest, they were significantly more likely to use a new needle, but they also had higher injection practices, like shooting up in a shooting gallery. And we found an interaction between age and drug treatment. So younger individuals were more likely to have accessed drug treatment than older individuals. But like I said before, drug treatment was higher in the people who had gone to pharmacies than those who had not. And when we looked at the low-frequency pharmacies, we found the same two things, which was increased access in the past 6 months to drug treatment, and also people were more likely to use a new needle when they were injecting. We also found that pharmacy users tended to be younger, and they were more likely to be male. So consistent with other findings, we found that people who buy syringes in pharmacies, they're more likely to be using a new syringe when they're injecting. However, the most significant findings of this study were that people purchasing syringes from pharmacies were most frequently demonstrating high-risk injection behaviors, a history of drug abuse treatment, and infrequent use of medical services. So one of the findings that we found was this high association between drug treatment, between accessing drug treatment and pharmacy use. Conversations do occur between pharmacy staff and technicians and IDUs, but they're rare. And when they do occur, they're often about drug treatment cessation. So we might think that the observed association could be the result of conversations that are occurring between pharmacy staff or technicians and IDs in the pharmacy, but like I said, it's a cross-sectional study, so we can't infer that the association is causal. It may also be that people that purchase syringes in pharmacies also go to pharmacies for other reasons, and they're more comfortable with the staff, or that people that go to pharmacies in general have more health-seeking behaviors. Maybe they seek treatment for all conditions, including drug treatment. Maybe they're more comfortable asking for advice from the pharmacist, or for asking for a referral, or saying that they have a problem, trying to see if the pharmacist can refer them to somebody. So for these reasons, they may also be more receptive to a public health message coming from their pharmacist. So for these reasons, pharmacy staff can potentially play an integral role in not only connecting well-established IDs with treatment, but also in encouraging continued efforts to cease drug use for those that are already been trying. Future prospective studies that follow IDUs who purchase syringes in pharmacies over time are needed to explain this association in further detail. We also found that IDUs purchasing syringes have decreased access to health services. And pharmacists are healthcare professionals, so they may be able to link injection drug users with needed services that, like I said before, many don't have insurance or they fear getting involved in the medical system. To these needed services that they have trouble getting on their own by building trusting relationships with them. And this is another important avenue to explore further. Since pharmacists and clerks have the potential to link IDUs with substance abuse treatment and possibly medical services, the next step is to develop an intervention that connects pharmacies with substance abuse treatment and medical care so that referrals can be made and more readily used. Since pharmacies have the potential to improve the health of IDUs and syringe customers, and to curb the HIV epidemic in this population, public health efforts to increase pharmacy syringe access should be continued.
Are there any, we have just a few minutes for questions, but we got a few.
The inserts that are required by law to be put in are, they basically just say how to inject safely and to not share needles. We've been doing some intervention studies where we have actually provided materials for pharmacists to deliver to their customers that have information about medical and social services and drug treatment services in their neighborhood that they could access, pamphlets about how to inject safer, more safely, some information about what to do if they have hepatitis C or HIV, how to cope with those things. And like I said, we were suggesting interventions of this sort. One of the things is just kind of getting pharmacists to feel like they're comfortable delivering this information and talking with IDUs. But hopefully, I guess, from our intervention, if it shows that these factors are significant, the law could expand to say that more of these types of materials should be included in the sale. But right now, it's not required by law, so it's based on, you know, individual funds.
Two quick questions, and then we move on. And one of them is, here is at one time, they were trying to use the needles that can only be used once. Do they work or not? And are they, you're not using those needles. Those are the ones that retract, right? What do they call it? Safe needles, yeah. Are there ways around them, by the way? I don't know, but I know that's...
The safe needles are not very popular among injection drug users. Not actually that. It's like the size of the needle. Usually when people come in and buy a syringe, they have a specific size that they want, and often the retractable ones have shorter ends, and sometimes when you're cooking drugs, the plastic will melt over the tip. So
that doesn't work, but maybe that's the thing.
I mean, maybe if you could develop a different one that would work, but they've tried that and it hasn't done very well.
I'll ask one other question. 30 years ago, it seems to me, the Swiss tried giving away needles for nothing. They were one of the first. And they were fairly effective for a while when they were giving the free needles change. What happened to those programs? You said that these guys have to pay for the needles.
Well, in pharmacies, you have to pay.
What about in the...
Syringe exchange programs are... So they have different rules. Sometimes it's a one-for-one exchange. Sometimes you can get as many as you want, or a two-for-one exchange.
Does that work more effectively? Because this, you know, without being in your field, looking at this, this looks pretty discouraging. I'm not talking about that the pharmacists aren't good guys, or that it's not a place to do it, but it doesn't look like the program is working.
It was without intervention. This was saying... do people that go to pharmacies have the same types of things that, same benefits that come from a syringe exchange? And the thing is no, because syringe exchange programs have these additional factors in place. They already have things in place to link people with services. They have medical services provided sometimes on-site. They test people on-site. And they provide harm reduction. And as pharmacies are set up now, that's not the way it is. But just think, this is a place that has access to needles. People can discreetly get them. They're on every street corner. There's no stigma associated with going into there. If we could just provide some sort of link to these services, which seems logical, and even if you look at just the drug treatment thing, that's one of the major legislative barriers that people are afraid that if you increase syringe access, that drug use is going to go up or that people are not going to be going into treatment. But people that are going to pharmacies do go into treatment, which suggests that if we provide additional services, maybe they'll take them up. And why not a place that has people that are trained in health, and, I mean, they have contact with doctors every day. If we facilitate this kind of interaction between the two, I would disagree with you that there's potential for...
You misunderstood my point. My point was not that the pharmacists don't have a role or couldn't have a role. My point was that if you took a look at the statistics, the needle exchange programs aren't being very effective in that
it's
delivering it.
These weren't syringe exchange programs.
They're making needles available. If you take a look at the number of people shooting up, the number of people still going, it doesn't matter where they're getting them from. You took a look at your slides.
I didn't have a number of people shooting up.
What did you have?
I had people that were using shooting galleries.
Pardon me. Using shooting galleries. That says the program is, these people are they're getting needles out of one source or the other, but they're still going to shooting galleries.
That is actually an interesting thing that would require further studies. Because the thing about shooting galleries is that they often have it's associated with high-risk behavior, but it's contradictory in that if you look right below it, people are, 9.49 times as likely to use a new needle. So are they going to shooting galleries and using a new needle? Is the reason that we think shooting galleries are bad, are they actually the same thing that we're thinking of? Maybe people are bringing in, new syringes into shooting galleries. And if that's the case, maybe we're looking at it as a high-risk injection practice when maybe it's not anymore.